Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining Dr. Perletta Ramos and Roz Shell in Living Life Powerfully. We help you turn the ordinary into the extraordinary by claiming your power, getting your heart in the game, and learning how to live from the inside out. Let's create more happiness and success in your life.
Y'all, today is a fantastic and amazing day. Roz and I are here to bring you the fifth part of our five-part series on relationships. Today, we're focusing on the greatest love of all, the love of self and the relationship with self. Specifically, we're going to talk about how we can develop a more deeper loving connection in relationship with ourselves. And so, Roz, you and I were having a conversation about this very recently, this very topic. I tend to believe that most of us are cultivated from childhood in order to develop relationships with others, beginning with our parents and extending to our siblings if we have them, or extended family members and friends, and in elementary and high school and beyond. We're socialized to cultivate relationships with people in social settings. Certainly at work would be another one of those venues. However, I venture to say that most of us don't get the same type of exposure and understanding and appreciation for cultivating a relationship with ourselves. And when I talk about a relationship with yourself, we're not really talking about it in the casual sense of self, but we're talking about it in a more deep intimacy connection with the I am, that part of you that is sometimes not the personality that you necessarily agree with. It's that deeper aspect of yourself. And I think if we're not feeding ourselves quite often and giving ourselves the love that we seek, we can become more susceptible to seeking that love and validation from others. And sometimes that can lead to things that are unhealthy, and we become self-sacrificing. And so there's a song, actually, that we stole the title of the show from. That song is The Greatest Love of All that Whitney Houston made famous. It was actually written by a woman by the name of Linda Creed, and she was in the midst of a struggle with breast cancer. She eventually actually died from breast cancer. And in the song, some of you may be familiar with the lyrics, she says, "Everybody is searching for a hero. People need someone to look up to. I never found anyone who fulfilled my needs, a lonely place to be. And so I learned to depend on me." And then later on, she goes on to say, "No matter what they take from me, they can't take away my dignity, because the greatest love of all is happening to me. I found the greatest love of all inside of me." I love that song. Do you know that song?
I love that song, too. Oh, I love that song. One of my favorites.
Oh,
and I think I
that.
Cry every time I hear that song. I cry.
We should play that song. I would break out, but I don't want you to, you know, start laughing instead of crying.
Oh, go ahead, Perletta.
Make
me cry.
And so what is it about that song that makes you cry, though?
You know, it's that transition, you know, where she goes from, you know, like she goes from like depending on others to finally depending on herself, realizing it's that lonely place, but then really realizing that that place is actually, you know, a blessing, because that's where she discovers the real love for herself, that the greatest love of all. And I relate to that, Perletta. I really relate to that, because, you know, being in a marriage that probably did not serve me very well in terms of feeling supported, and I sort of had that same journey where I had to depend on me if I wanted to be happy. And then through that process, I too learned that, you know, that is the greatest love. Because let's face it, I mean, you know, we go from, you know, being taken care of by our parents and, you know, we have all this outside stimulation. We're at the mercy of other people. And then all of a sudden we're 18, 20 years. We really think that now it's time to move on and, you know, get married and have somebody else love us and take care of us. And then we'll have kids and, you know, and it just, life doesn't always happen like that. And at the end of the day, you end up saying, okay, it is really about me.
Mm.
So I love this topic. I love, you know, really looking at exactly where you are. And again, it's like a continuum, right? I think that my love for myself has been evolving as I've been evolving. You know, now it's becoming very unconditioned. That is just such a beautiful place to be. Before, it had to do with, you know, what I was doing, you know, what I was making, you know, who I was with, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, it was always tied to something. It was always conditional. And now, at this stage of my life, it's like totally unconditional. And it is a wonderful place to be.
Well, I appreciate a number of things that you say, but let's focus on one of them, and that being the one where you talked about your sense of love was tied to, you know, these outside factors, you know, material things, how much you made, and perhaps where you lived, and, you know, the social framework. I think in mm-hmm. the Western Hemisphere, it's very easy to get caught up in that trap of feeling good about who we are based upon what we have. And consequently, if we don't have what we think we should have, to feel bad about ourselves or to feel inadequate in some way. And so this idea of self-acceptance, really, being true to who you are and truly accepting whatever position you're in, you know, your sense of self and your sense of care and concern and intimacy with yourself ought not be dependent on the house you live in or how much money you make or the career that you have. I know for me, I felt important at various times based upon my occupation and being called a lawyer. You know, there's a lot of self-esteem that I had caught up in that. And it was in the position. It wasn't in me, not really. Right? Because if it's within you, ultimately, if it's taken away, you still feel good about yourself. Actually, I was having a conversation with a gentleman just yesterday, and he was saying how he was a professional and he had lost his job. And when he lost his job, he suffered because he didn't feel adequate anymore. He didn't feel good about himself. And he said, I knew that I wasn't my job, but I still identified so much with what I did that I didn't feel value for who I was. And so this notion of really accepting yourself transcends the attachment to the things that you have in your life, whatever those things may be.
And yes.
It's a very powerful
yes.
tool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Were you thinking
yeah,
something
I mean,
wrong?
Yeah, I, you know, I'm just really struck by what you're saying. I mean, this distinction that we make, you know, in how we love ourselves as we're attached to all these outside things, and then we question when that no longer fulfills us, right? At that point, we sit back and we question who we are. I mean, you know, just like Whitney Houston's song, it's like that's a lonely place.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very lonely place. And that place of that I am that you referred to, and maybe we can talk a little bit about that, Perletta, because I'm not sure if you know, some people may not be clear about what that means. What is that I am? I know that you referred to that.
Well, the I am is not an identification. I'm going to tell you what it's not, and I'm going to tell you what it is. The I am is not an identification with personality or with external pursuit or with possession. The I am is the essence of your beingness. And some may refer to it as your spirit or your soul, or, you know, it is the you that you are stripped of everything and anything. And it is the you that I believe that's connected to everything. So it transcends, you know, the body. And I think that there's a journey to that, really, to that place of being authentic. You know, I'm middle-aged. You know, I'm going on 40. I'll be 47 on my next birthday. And I've been in a number of conversations with women who are my age and older who dye their hair or feel uncomfortable with their aging process. Either they're in menopause or, you know, perimenopause, and they're feeling challenged with their body changing and feeling less vibrant, less beautiful, less something. And much of the conversation that I have been having with them is around this conversation that we're in about not just accepting yourself, but being okay with who and what you are, whatever that is, and letting go of that self-judgment. Because ultimately, you're not the body. You can identify with the body, but you're much greater than that. And so developing an awareness of that, the part of yourself that transcends even your body and your look, takes you know, it's a process, and it takes time, and it takes a willingness and openness to cultivate that part of yourself.
And so why do you think, Perletta, that that many of us are even afraid to go there, like even to look within, to look at ourselves? You know, being the therapist that I am, I mean, I'm dealing with this all the time with clients that come in, and you know, the last thing they want to do is focus on themselves, especially when I do like couples counseling. They come in here thinking that they're going to change the other person. So what is it? What is that fear that keeps us from being able to really look at ourselves? What do you think that's about?
It's much a fear as it is a lack of awareness. I remember being in the slumber, and certainly, and I'm going to describe the slumber in a second, but being in relationship with another person and looking at their fault, my perception of their fault, and thinking that if they fix this, we wouldn't have any problems. We're cultivated to look outside of ourselves for the answer. And, you know, so this idea of the self-acceptance extends to others. Once we're able to accept ourselves, then we can also look at accepting other people as they are and not changing them. But when we don't accept ourselves, consequently, we treat other people quite often the way we treat ourselves, and we don't accept other people. And we don't live in an environment where we're taught how to truly accept and love ourselves and to be accepting of other people. We consistently want people to change to meet our needs.
Yeah.
And and that sets up disappointment and expectation and dissatisfaction, which is a part of why the divorce rates are so high, I believe at least. And so getting back to this conversation of, you know, what's necessary, it's looking at yourself. It's turning that mirror into a mirror of self-reflection and looking at healing, you know, any distortions that you have about who and what you are.
Right. But, you know, I like to think of it like as like a house. Let's say there's a house and it's dark and you bring light into the house. Okay. Let's say you bring a nice big lamp into the house. Now you can see all the cobwebs. You can see all kinds of stuff that you couldn't see in the dark. Okay. And I think personally, I think that it's really scary for most of us to look within ourselves, because it's seeing all those cobwebs and seeing all of that stuff inside of us that we have perhaps gotten acclimated to. You know, we've gotten good at, like, distracting ourselves from that. So when we see all those cobwebs and all of that whatever inside of us, then we tend to, it can get pretty scary. It can get pretty lonely in that place. And that's where I see a lot of, you know, that's when clients will want to run away from that. And a lot of, sometimes they just won't come back to therapy, or, you know, they start blaming even other people. So I'm just saying, you know, this process of even being able to look within, it takes a lot of courage. Mm-hmm. Because what we find inside is not always pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
so
it leads to another point, which is to be kind to yourself as you engage in this journey, and to let go of perfectionistic tendencies that we sometimes have. You know, we can be very critical of ourselves, which leads to judgment of ourselves, and engaging in blaming or shaming or feeling guilty about who we are, wanting to be, you know, this idealized version of ourselves, or not wanting to look. And so it is hard. At the same time, if you're kind and loving to yourself in the process, and if you mm-hmm. give yourself compassion as you're accepting, you know, yourself, it's like, okay, I can accept the parts about myself I love and I think are fantastic and amazing, and I can accept these parts of myself where I have opportunities for growth. And as I do that with compassion, then I can let go of the critic and my, you know, tendencies to want to feel guilty or to feel shame about who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a process. It doesn't necessarily occur easily. And sometimes it takes effort. You know, like you said, it takes courage and it takes effort, particularly with the shadow parts of ourselves, the pieces that we don't necessarily like to see or to acknowledge.
Well, you know, and I like that, you know, being able to go inside and be kind to yourself. And also, I think what can help is to realize our uniqueness. You know, I was just reading that the chances of you being born as you, with all of your unique attributes and your personality and all of that, is 1 in 400 trillion. Mm. 1 in 400 trillion. So you're literally a miracle. I mean, you know, and I think to be able to realize our specialness, you know, our uniqueness, I think that to me is a very powerful way to view yourself. And
absolutely.
In that encompasses each and every part of us, whether it's the shadow, whether it's the, you know, the good parts of us that we like. We are indeed very unique human beings, and that is 1 of 400 trillion chance of you being born as you.
It's funny that you say that, because I tell my children they're special, and so is everyone else. One of the concepts mm-hmm. I try to raise them with is, you know, quite often when we feel like there's a person that's special, they're the only people that can occupy that space. Like, only one person can be special. You know, like if you're in a group dynamic, only one person gets to be the leader and everyone else has to be the follower. Well, no, not really. In your own world, right, in your own uniqueness, you are special. And your light mm-hmm. shining doesn't have to dim anybody else's light.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that idea, I love what you're talking about in terms of recognizing your uniqueness, because it's in that you can be authentic, right? As opposed
mm-hmm.
to sometimes we tend in our culture to want to assimilate, right, in group dynamics in particular. We want to be like others and have them be like us. And the benefit of that is you get to socialize, But the detriment sometimes is we are afraid to stand out and be true to our uniqueness and our authenticity because we want to be accepted. And the reality is we only get to accept ourselves when we're being authentic with who and what we are and how we feel and how we think. So it's important to really notice and silence the inner critic if you find that you struggle sometimes to honor yourself and what's true for you. Were you going to say
Well, you know, Tracy... Yeah, I was going to say Tracy McMillan in her book, Why You Are Not Married Yet, she talks about a really interesting concept, which I want to talk about, is she talks about marrying yourself. Marrying yourself. That means, you know, commit to yourself and put a ring on it. And, you know, and she talks in her book about...
Did she steal
about,
that from Beyonce?
I probably. And, you know, she said, imagine marrying yourself for richer or poorer, for better or worse, in sickness and health, to have and to hold. All those vows that you would take, if you were to walk down the aisle, can you take those same vows for yourself and marry yourself? And I thought that was pretty cool because, you know, in for richer or poorer, for better or worse, in sickness and in health, to have and hold. Look how quickly the winds can change inside of us. You know, look how quickly self-doubts can come up. And to be able to stay committed to ourselves and to actually that no matter what's happening, we are truly committed to ourselves. Isn't that what we're looking for in a relationship, in any relationship? If we
Absolutely.
Were to get married or whatever, yeah.
Well, I think that we're evolving as a culture because most often, particularly for women, the idea of being single meant that you had failed, certainly by a certain age, you know. Growing into adulthood and getting married was seen as the epitome of, you know, success. And as we're evolving now, more and more people are putting off getting married. And so you have a longer period of time to be with yourself, to understand who you are and how you feel and what you think. And so marrying yourself is, you know, doesn't mean that you end up being a spinster, you know. It means that you have an opportunity to cultivate this relationship that can be quite powerful and ultimately can make you, I think, a better person to engage in relationship with, whether it's in a partnership or with family or friends. And I think one of the other key pieces of that is really healing yourself. You know, we tear in places we can't see sometimes, and other places in the heart, or even our thinking about ourselves when we're incredibly judgmental and critical of ourselves. So this idea of healing allows for us to step more and more into self-acceptance. And that also takes time, which is becoming a theme as well, a theme of the conversation in terms of relationship with the self. I know there are aspects of my personality I call their life lessons. I just seem to be working on them. You know, I've distinguished them maybe in my 20s. I got a deeper understanding in my 30s. And in my 40s, I have to say I'm sick and tired of dealing with certain things. But that's okay. Because they're life lessons. And it's like, you know what? It's like peeling back that onion. People use that metaphor because it really speaks to how you know, on this journey of life where there isn't necessarily a final destination, you know, it's just a continuum, that you continue to grow. And as you heal and really look at your life as an opportunity for evolution, which means that, you know, the more you discover about who and what you are, the more you recognize sometimes the things that you need to let go of to step more powerfully into a greater aspect of yourself. So that nurturing and caring about your own needs is really important. And reflecting on what would be necessary for you to heal certain aspects of your life. Taking the time to do that is such an act of self-care and nurturing that I'm not sure many of us involve ourselves in because we're so busy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, if we can't, as Misery said, if you're not good company to yourself, you're not going to be good company to anyone else. So the first place to start is to look within yourself, developing this deep relationship is so worth it. It is probably the most important journey you will take in your life. That journey within yourself, self-discovery. Once you get through those cobwebs and all of that other stuff, I mean, it's just, I have about 10 years, advantage. I've got 10 more years than you, Perletta. So I can tell you in the 50s, it even gets even deeper. So it's just a beautiful process. That's why it is so difficult for me to understand people that have an issue with the aging. I just, because for me, it just keeps getting better and better. I would not give a single day back. There is no way. So, maybe it's because I know there's so much more to discover, and with each day, it gets deeper and it gets better.
Yes, it does. Well, there's a capacity for that. Whether we choose that is up to us. There's one more thing that I want to offer as a suggestion that can help lead to greater self-acceptance and love, and that is forgiveness of oneself. And we have a couple more moments left. I invite our listeners the idea of exploring their great qualities and beginning to use self-acceptance as a way to tap into their happiness by forgiving themselves, acknowledging that you're doing your best, and being grateful for who you are in your mind, who you are in your body, you know, who you are in your feelings, your spirit, all of you. And forgive yourself for ways that you don't feel like you live up to your own expectations. Quite often we're our worst critics, and it keeps us from stepping more fully into self-love and acceptance when we harbor self-resentment, you know, anger over things we felt like we should have done, resentments over the past, you know, not feeling like we're not measuring up to our own expectations. But forgiving yourself can be a real powerful tool to step more deeply into loving yourself.
I would have to agree 110%, Perletta.
I feel like this has flown by, Raj. Our 30 minutes today has just flown by. Well, Raj is going to be leading us in a conversation next week that you won't want to miss. Thank you for joining us on Living Life Powerfully. Between now and next Monday, if you'd like to reach us, please feel free to email us at pearlrajradio@gmail.com. And if you'd like to get recent updates on our show, make sure to check us out on Facebook. Our Facebook page is called Living Life Powerfully. Have a fantastic and an amazing week.